Hello, everyone. So basically, what I'm going to do is give you a sort of overview from the National Institute of Environmental Health Sciences perspective, and it'll set up for the next couple of presentations that follow me. And I have nothing to disclose. And I just wanted to start with this slide, which seems particularly timely now, linking the need for responder training and climate preparedness. They've come together as key priorities as the nation faces these continuous severe weather events. And the training of responders and other volunteers has also become a national priority. We're seeing that local coastal communities creating expertise for building the climate resilience and adaptation. NIEHS has been a public health leader in responding to a variety of catastrophic weather events, Western wildfires, Midwest floods, California earthquakes, and Gulf Coast hurricanes. And the preparedness and education of community responders has been a critical element in assuming a robust community response and the quick creation of community recovery capacity. The worker education and training program at NIEHS works with community emergency response teams, local emergency planning groups, and community-based organizations to become more prepared and resilient. And on Friday, the president issued an executive order that's designed to support climate resilience infrastructure investment in states and communities. And it calls for an interagency council on climate preparedness and resilience, and a state, local, and tribal leaders task force to help inform that council. And the executive order is designed to find new strategies that will boost the nation's resilience to the kinds of severe weather events that we've been seeing. So just some background on NIEHS's worker education and training program for those who aren't familiar. It was created in 1986 by the Superfund Amendments and Reauthorization Act. And it authorized a competitive grants program for training in hazardous waste removal, containment, and emergency response to events involving toxic substances. From this program, there were four specific areas of basically concentration at this point. There's the basic hazardous waste worker training program, Department of Energy program, minority worker training program, and a hazmat disaster preparedness training program, which is what facilitated the involvement of NIEHS in all of these types of disasters. The worker education training program has an emergency support activation plan, and it's built on the protocols that come from the Worker Safety and Health Annex of the National Response Framework. The ESAP is the guiding document that outlines the roles and responsibilities for WETP and its awardees during the disasters where they engage. And so this slide just shows an overall framework for disaster response system. And focusing on the event, you have the steps involved in preparedness that hopefully are taking place, but we know all too well that they don't always happen. You have the actual disaster itself, where you're having acute care, surveillance, and stabilizing critical needs. And then the recovery period, which is frankly where the worker education and training program has really come into play the most in some of these events, where there are long-term health needs, rebuilding, sustained information gaps, and contamination and data needs. And folks probably know that most of these incidents are actually managed locally, and it's only a handful that sort of come up to this higher level where the federal government is getting involved as well. And in order for WETP to get involved, the state governor needs to request federal support. So this is actually our model for disaster response training development process, and it starts with site characterization, moves to job hazard analysis to see what tasks are actually being performed and by what populations, looking at injury and illness rates from the immediate response period, population identification. You're doing a needs assessment, looking at the impacted communities, moving on to a training plan to develop site-specific training from all the data that you're gathering, what are the actual hazards that really need to be addressed, that the folks really need to be aware of. And one thing that I didn't really address yet was actually that instead of, at this point, what we're really talking about with the worker education and training program is that it's not necessarily the first responders that we're dealing with anymore at this point. At this point, we're talking about the actual cleanup workers, so folks who are typically involved in construction-type activities, infrastructure activities, and things like that. And these folks don't generally, it's not a given that these people have had sort of disaster preparedness type training and may not already be familiar with the types of differences between, you know, working in their normal construction job and the additional hazards that happen at or that are there at a disaster cleanup site. And then we do a follow-up assessment. We have evaluation survey tools, looking at injury and illness rates, getting the feedback from safety officers to see what's actually happening. And this slide just sort of outlines the diverse array of customers that the worker education and training program works with. There's contractors and their workers, there's businesses, residents who are returning to their homes and small business owners, federal, state, county, and city governments, and then non-governmental organizations, volunteer groups, like the volunteer organizations active in disasters and long-term recovery groups, community groups, academic institutions, and unions. And in all of the worker education and training engagement activities in disasters, the goal is to provide health and safety support and training, and we want to prevent as many injuries, illnesses, and fatalities during the cleanup and recovery as, you know, as possible. We have been involved in numerous responses and cleanup incidents. We were engaged at the World Trade Center, Hurricane Katrina and Rita, the BP oil spill, and latest is Superstorm Sandy. So just a quick overview and sort of the similarities and differences between these various events. 9/11 was a relatively small area. It was an intentional act. There was immediate exposures from the people who were working there in the early days and weeks. Obviously, work and cleanup activities went on for months. But the primary work was within a defined perimeter. Hurricane Katrina, it was a much larger area. Category 4 hurricane, fouled levees, and as with 9/11, it was the Stafford Act that was driving the response. And so for those who aren't familiar, the Stafford Act brings with it specific sort of guidance that the federal government is sort of falling under and what it can and can't do, and this sort of differs from the structure that's involved with an oil spill, which is driven by the National Contingency Plan. And in the National Contingency Plan, which is what we saw driving or overarching of the BP oil spill, was that with that you had a central organization that was responsible for the cleanup that worked in concert with the federal government. So that this was different in terms of how we were all able to engage in the cleanup activities and ensuring that folks had proper training. And this was, again, it was a large area, but it was one complex hazardous substance, even though there were obviously other safety hazards that were there. And so, you know, from all of the past disasters that we've been involved in, there were hazards, there were recognized challenges, thank you, that we were familiar with. After each of the disasters that I mentioned, we held lessons learned workshops with all of the folks that had been engaged in these cleanup activities. Excuse me. And we really tried to parse through all of the specific issues and what could be done better in the next event. But some of the challenges that we recognized were from the previous events were mold, to a lesser degree than we have seen in Sandy, no clear structure for the training to happen, inadequate time allotted for the training to happen, and people without adequate training, frankly, performing the work that needed to be done. And also repeated in each of these events were stress to the individuals who were doing the cleanup work and who lived in the surrounding communities. So as folks know, Superstorm Sandy hit us about a year ago. Again, this was a large urban area. It was tidal surge. There was a whole history from 9/11 that set up an awareness of certain hazards that follow any type of disaster. And there was, so I think they had a sense of what to expect with regard to hazards. And there was already this whole volunteer infrastructure that had been organized previously that could be leveraged. So the National Clearinghouse for Worker Safety and Health Training, which is where I work, and what supports the Worker Education and Training Program, developed a whole host of resource materials for the recovery workers. And we typically do this after each of the events that happen. We set up a website specifically devoted to materials that can help folks involved in the cleanup activity. So in this case, we developed a mold remediation guide, a cleanup training tool, which could be used by trainers to provide awareness level training, and a mold remediation booklet. And you can find some of these in the back of the room. And all of these documents were developed by consensus to address the health and safety hazards associated with mold cleanup. Excuse me. We also coordinated to provide site hazard assessments, developed the site-specific training for workers. All of this was classroom-based training. We were integrated into the joint field offices in both New York and New Jersey. The grantees provided site-specific health and training to more than 1,000 cleanup workers. We did technical assistance and lots of outreach and briefings, handing out materials and things like that. We're continuing with all of these activities as we speak. Excuse me. Thank you so much. And the other site-specific training and development, again, mold that we mentioned, and Mitch will be talking about that, asbestos lead, work zone safety, most really important, the appropriate use of personal protective equipment, and communicating and training to a culturally diverse population. In this case, there's a bunch of Spanish language training that's taking place. In other events, we develop materials for Vietnamese populations as well. And the specific challenges that we've seen that have been a little bit, you know, particular to Sandy is the use of volunteers to do the cleanup and recovery work. And Jonathan's going to be talking a little bit more about that, and the actual amount of mold remediation that's been necessary. We know we've seen all this before after Katrina, but it seems to be much more extensive this time around. So with that, I will close.